Okay, so officially welcome to call number 4, where we're going to be talking about the idea of the container. So just a bit of a recap of what's happened to bring us to this point. So in the first call, we talked about the 3 core elements of building a thriving practice, and that was having your platform, what you're known for, the container, what makes people want to stick around, tactics you can use to make it easy for clients to find you. Then the second week, we talked more in depth about the platform. We went into depth about the 6 things you can be known for and help you figure out which ones are solid for you, which ones are fuzzy. We did that exercise with the 6 pieces. Last week, we talked about the perfect client. We went in depth into the demographics, psychographics, and the journey that they're on, plus the 6 criteria of an ideal target market. This week, we're going into the container. And the container, you're going to learn 10 key elements that you can that can make your business far, far more sustainable for you and attractive to you, but also safer for your ideal clients. So hopefully you're going to leave this session knowing just what you need to do in order to have the perfect client say, aha, this is just right for me. And I've got some sweet bonuses for you that I think you're going to like as a part of this call. So that's where we're going. That's the trajectory. I'd already posted that document about the container in the group, and in fact, let me just go grab that and repost it, not to maybe read along as we go, but there's so many now little inner circles to go through in the documents, but this is something to look at later, because I think it's probably the most in-depth thing I've ever written about the container. So give me a second while I find that. And as I'm pulling that up, actually, I'd love for you to post on the wall, what do you think, given what you know about the container so far, what are your thoughts about what are the aspects of the container? What are the different elements that go into having a strong container from what you know about it so far? So let's take a couple minutes and have everyone just jot down what are your ideas so far. Okay. Sorry, what was the question? Oh, Jane still can't get in? Oh, you keep getting a busy signal. Oh, poor Jane. Okay, well, we'll try to work on that while you're writing things up. So, yeah, the question is the container. What do you think are the specific elements that you need to have a strong container in your business, the bucket that keeps people around? You know, it's fine to talk about platform, and it's fine to talk about ideal client and sort of have that internal clarity. But now we're looking at, in a way, the business is the boat that takes them from island A to island B. So what do you think are the elements that matter the most in having a boat that is really clear and compelling? Just take a minute. See if anything comes to mind. If not, I'll keep talking. Yeah, so Tim Emerson said, the container, what happens once they find us? That is really the question. That's the brilliantly summarized Tim. Yeah, that's the question. What happens once they find us? You know, they go through the paths, whatever those are, and they come across you. But then what do they see once they're there? And what are the elements that we need to have in place? Yanina said, a place place for them to get to know you or interact, like a blog or some other regular contact. Awesome. Allison, conveying your personality really well. Yeah, your container should convey your personality. It should convey who you are. Deborah said, my understanding of the container so far is having methods to capture people, to retain a relationship from the point where they're first interested to the point where they're ready to engage. Yes, exactly. And I would say once they've engaged, how you keep them engaged, you know, because especially if you're a practitioner, you see somebody, they get well, they leave. So is there a way that we can have a container that builds beyond that point, you know, of them leaving, but we actually still keep a relationship in a way where we're not just hounding them to come back for another session that they may or may not really need? Lishui said, a direction you want to take the clients, permission, dialogue, not broadcasting, teaching people, letting them get to know you. That's great. Deb said, a way for people to feel held in the process, structure, etc. That's so good. I love that. Because, you know, a lot of times we focus on like, oh, I just want to give value, but we don't focus on what they're receiving and what their experience of it is. So structure allows people to feel held in a process. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So Tara said, to have some skills and experience, to be able to talk about what you do in a way that sounds like you know what you're talking about because you do. Yeah. So again, it's kind of a structure of even how we sometimes describe and talk about what we do, not just rambling on a homepage, but having a homepage really clearly laid out. Joseph said, it seems like there needs to be a strong, evident connection between the benefits and the mechanisms that produce the benefits. Connection between the benefits and the mechanisms that produce the benefits. I'm not totally sure I get it. Maybe, Joseph, if you could say a bit more about that, just comment below. Michelle's – oh, no. Some of you are having a really bad sound connection. I'm sorry to hear that. I hope it's better. Keep giving me feedback if it's terrible. Tara, to inspire confidence and trust. Barbara said, offering different services. In my case, it could be classes, CDs, DVDs, retreats, workshops, books. Awesome. You're all on track. All of these are a part of it. Kathy said, deepening the relationship. Tara, have a range of services, offerings, workshops, individual newsletter. Okay. I think we've got enough. That's a really great sense. So I think you're actually all you're on track. So let me delve into this. So again, the container is kind of the boat. It takes them from island A to island B at a very simple level. It embodies a platform. And here's the thing. If your platform is fuzzy, the container will be fuzzy. And if the container is fuzzy, everything gets really hard because then people show up and they might be really excited, but they it doesn't it doesn't land for them what you're about. It's not clear. And it's important to figure this out because if you don't have a really strong container, most hubs and affiliates or joint venture partners, whatever, will have a harder time endorsing you. I have a colleague of mine who I love, who I am so excited to endorse to my list, but his homepage isn't ready on his website, and I actually don't think his website is clear enough to receive people. It's like his home isn't ready. It's still a bit cluttered and messy. It's half built. So I don't want to host a party at his house knowing that people are going to show up and it's going to be kind of leaking. Here's what I love about thinking about the platform, or rather the container, is that it's one thing to think abstractly about the platform and think we're clear, but as soon as we have to materialize it and concretize it into a container and the different pieces and elements of that, wow, all of a sudden it gets really clear where we're actually clear and where we're fuzzy. So there's that. So we ultimately often need to start with a platform and build the container. And let me just lift this up for your consideration. Sometimes you can reverse engineer it. Sometimes what happens is people build a really magical, amazing thing and have to reverse engineer the platform out of it. I think about the great artistic masters, you know, I doubt Van Gogh sat down and did a big exercise, what his platform was, what his point was, why he was doing it. He just painted. And I bet you he probably couldn't, on the surface, tell you necessarily what it was about or give you a big theory about it. If you pulled it out of him, you'd probably find there was a lot there, but you'd probably have to really dig deep and pull it out. Most people who are really wonderful at things are just their naturals. They're sort of unconsciously competent at it. You have to kind of pull it out. A great chef might intuitively know how to pull things together and make these things and not even know exactly why they're doing the things. So you create something really wonderful, and I get this very strong response, and that's wonderful. And then I would just look at, like, wow, what is the point of view of this? Why am I doing this? So I hope that makes sense. So you can either start with the platform into the container, or if you already have a strong container, sometimes you can reverse reverse engineer it. So Deborah said, I thought the connection between island A and B is the journey, not the container. Yeah, it is the journey, but the boat they get in to make that journey, that particular journey, is the container. the journey, they could go to a lot of different people. They could get on a ton of different boats to take their journey. So then it becomes this question, why should they pick your boat versus something else? You're saying, I thought the container was more of a marketing technique. How do you manage to keep usefully talking to them until they're ready to actually schedule? I would say it's that, and it's the building relationship beyond that. I don't see that there's necessarily a hard and fast line between those two. Yeah. So I hope that makes sense. And okay. So if you think about it, like I was thinking about an example the other day of at a trade show. So you might have a lot of ways to get people to come to your booth, but the booth itself is the container, or at least the beginning of the container, you know. Once they get there, what do they see? Do they want to come in? Are they drawn in? Is there a way for them to give you their contact info, etc.? The core metaphor I've used a lot for the container with you all is this idea of the bucket. And the challenge with most people's buckets is they're very leaky and kind of ugly versus very strong and beautiful. They've got holes in them. The water keeps pouring out. And so the initial thought is, my bucket's always empty, so I need more clients. And what I want to suggest is that strategically, long-term, and this is sort of tortoise versus hare, the holes in the bucket, make sure the bucket can contain any water that comes in. And it seems like a distraction because while you're doing that, you're not out getting more water into the bucket. So it seems like, oh, I'm not getting any clients or any money. But what you are doing is getting it ready. And obviously, we can't just take a year off and work on our container and go back. But I do want to suggest that the more time you invest into the container, the better. It's like for every 1 hour you invest, I think it saves like 10 hours long term. So there's that. And I also feel like the container doesn't just hold them, it holds us. The container, I think, has two purposes. The first is that it makes it safe for them to approach us and to be in a relationship with us. Safe in that there are levels of things, that there's a structure of things that keeps it safe, but it also makes it sustainable for us as well. Do a little bit later. But having that kind of a structure and container keeps it sustainable for us. I was thinking about it the other day of like if you were swimming and you're trying to carry your clients on your back, maybe you could get 3 clients on your back, and that's about it. And at a certain point, you actually need to build a boat. And the bigger a boat you have and the more solid a boat you have, the more people you can carry. Otherwise, you're stuck just doing it one at a time. Like, oh, let me get you from island A to island B. I'll swim you on my back. So you swim with them on your back the whole way, and you deposit. And they're thrilled, of course, with the personalized attention that they got, and they were so close to you, so intimate. Then you have to swim all the way back. You know, or maybe you swim with somebody from B to A and back and forth, and you get paid by each person. And even if they're paying really well, it's not a sustainable practice, that there's a certain level of scale that is not just desirable but fairly easy to achieve and that people might actually enjoy better than riding on your back. So I think of our container it's the structure that they're in, but again, it's also the structure we're in. I think of like feng shui being this you know, commitment to taking care of our space and the understanding that our physical space, our environment, is also just an extension of us. And I think we've all had this experience where it's like when your physical space gets kind of cluttered, how your brain gets cluttered. I know for me, it's like if my physical environment is cluttered, I can't work. I get so fuzzy. And so our environment isn't just something that we clean or, you know, take care of to support it. It's also, it supports us too. So the commitment to taking care of your container isn't just about the container. It's about that it holds a space for you. And it's not just about your clients. It takes care of you too. There's this question of what environment, what container is going to bring out the best in us. This commitment to deep self-care is also a commitment to service in the world, because it allows us to give our best. I think about in Ayurveda the doshas that they have, you know, whether you're Vata, Pitta, Kapha, and each of those requires a slightly different environment. One of my colleagues, Alex Baisley, you can check out his website at bigdreamprogram.com/WordPress. We've mentioned before, he's so brilliant around helping people figure out this environment and lifestyle piece. And the metaphor he gives is, you know, if you are an orchid, there's a certain soil that is perfect for you to grow. And if you were to take that orchid out of that soil and put it into a pot of soil that was good for a pine tree, it would start to die. All the right water, all the sunlight, and yet the soil is so wrong for it. And there's nothing wrong with the orchid. It's doing its best to survive, but the environment's wrong. And I think for a lot of people, they've got them planted, got themselves planted in the wrong environment. And they think it's them, and they feel guilty that they're struggling so much. And it's often just the wrong environment, the wrong lifestyle. So when I talk about the container, I'm going to be talking about it more from a business and marketing standpoint. But if you're interested in this question about the lifestyle, I would check out somebody like Alex Baisley. Because the way we structure the boat, you're going to spend a lot of time on this boat, you know, metaphorically. So you better love it. Alex gives a story often about these two barbers. And their whole life, all they want to do is be a barber. And so when they graduate, that's the first thing they do. I hope I haven't told this story before. Please, somebody stop me if I have. But they want to be barbers. And when they graduate from barbering school, they get ready. And one of them is just goes out, gets a lease on a place, gets the chairs, the scissors, the little swirly thing in the front, the jar of blue liquid stuff, and sets up the barbershop. And he's quite excited about it. The other one pauses for just a few minutes because he thinks, do I really want to have a barbershop? It's like, this is a big thing. If I get a lease on a place, because, you know, I really want to travel, and will I be able to do that? And he starts to think about his life and what he loves, and he realizes he wants to travel, and he really loves old folks a lot. He loves being with them, being surrounded by them, loves their stories. And it occurs to him that maybe, instead of having a shop, he could just get all of his barbering stuff, put it in a bag, and go to old folks' homes and cut hair, and listen to their stories. So he does that. So he gets the bag and he goes out, and he starts collecting all these stories. And every once in a while, one of these old folks tells just a zinger of a story. And he loves it and he writes it down. And eventually he gets so many of them, and he gets permission from the people, and he turns them into a book that he sells. And of course, the book does pretty well in town because all the old folks are telling their family they have to buy a lot of copies of it. And he turns that into a one-man play. And he starts touring that play around in different seasons. So he's getting to travel and see the world while doing this play and sharing their stories. And he gets to go home. And maybe he gets a blog about it. And he just starts figuring out all these other ways to share those stories. And in the end, he starts making even more money doing that than he was with the haircutting, building this kind of a business. And at the end of 20 years, you have the first barber, and he's sitting in his barber shop with his head in his hands, and he's just like, wow, I guess barbering wasn't for me. Because he's had to turn the close sign on the shop and regret missing another one of his kids' birthdays. That trip that he wanted to take with his family that he kept promising, but it just never worked out because he had to be in the shop. And he just said, yeah, barbering wasn't for me, I guess. And the second one, after 20 years, is looking back on all he's done, he's like, wow, barbering was so for me. And the point of the story is that it had nothing to do with barbering. It had everything to do with the lifestyle piece. And so when we look at the boat, it's really important that this boat is an authentic expression of us and that it doesn't just hold our clients in the journey, it also holds us in the journey. So that's an overall frame. I won't go too much more into the lifestyle piece because Alex is just such a genius at it. So I would just say if you're feeling you're in a place where you're doing what you love and yet it's still feeling like it doesn't work for you, there's something off about it, there's a good chance it's not the work itself, but it's the lifestyle piece. It's how you're doing it. So there's a thought for you. So the goal here, again, is to create a bucket that is super attractive that you're so excited to take out. I think Tim was saying that he was feeling embarrassed about sharing his website. And, you know, because it's being rebuilt, and I've been in that place too. So we want a bucket that we're so excited to show everybody and that will hold every single drop of water that comes into it. So the container. I want to go over 10 things that I think are the most important elements of the container. And you might think of some that I'm missing, which I'd love to hear. But I want to go over these 10 things. I'll give you a bunch of resources as I go along, and I'll probably post them on the wall after the call. But yeah, so get your pens ready. Just make a little adjustment here. Okay. So the first element of the container is the website. Having a website is just huge. You don't have to have a website, to be honest. There are people who grow a business without a website. And of course, today, it's just a ubiquitous thing. Remember that the container is primarily for the client about safety. The website is what allows them to check you out from a distance while you're sleeping, any risk, or interact with you. So the website is like the core piece. The most important things about a website. Number one, beauty is not everything. Beauty has definitely grown on me in marketing, but I've seen a lot of people spend a ton of money on their website to make it look so gorgeous. Gorgeous brochures. It looks so beautiful. And people will look at the brochure and say, oh my God, wow, what a beautiful brochure. This is amazing. Did you design this yourself? It's gorgeous. And then somebody says, well, oh, and would you like to book a session? Oh God, no. No. But this, can I keep this? This is going to... So it's like, just because it's beautiful does not equal clients. And I've seen that again and again and again. It doesn't mean it shouldn't be, but I wouldn't rely on that. Having a solid platform and a solid offer, a really clear container, much more important. Number two, you need to be able to update the website yourself. That's just a must. The day and age of having to pay a web designer to make updates on the content of your website are just done. So run away from any web designer that gives you that proposition. So things like WordPress, or there's one, yola.com, YOLA.com. And those you can make websites basically for free. Yola is totally for free. You can upgrade to various things. It's a template thing. Pretty simple, but if you just need to get something up quick to have something, you know, it's in improv comedy, we say, you know, what's on stage? You know what's better than nothing? Anything. You know. So it's the same, I think, with a website. It's better to have something up. That can act as a container. Sometimes the enemy of the good is the perfect. You know, waiting for everything to be just right. So, but on the website, you're going to want to really critically have a solid homepage. The homepage is the most important part of the website. And yet the homepage is often all about us. And I want to suggest that the homepage of a website needs to be all about them as the client, not us as the business. I can almost always predict the first three words on any website. You might want to check yours to see if this is true. But typically the first three words are customer name is, or not customer name, company name is. Company name is blank. And so it's all about us and who we are versus them, and their experience. So we want to write a web homepage that as soon as they land on it, they feel like, I'm home. These are my people, you know. And the best resource I can recommend around that is this How to Write a Lovable Homepage workbook. And I'll post a link to that in a second. My computer is being a bit slow. But How to Write a Lovable Homepage by Pink Elephant Communications. Some of you may have already gotten it. If you have, give it a shout out. It's pretty great. Gives you a really good guide to how to craft and write your homepage in a way that will grab people. So once you've got the homepage, the second most important page, I think, is going to be your bio page. And again, I'll post some links probably after the call, but the About Me page, where they can learn about you. This is true for a lot of businesses. I think for holistic practitioners, it's especially true because there's so much emotional vulnerability in coming to you. And they're like, I'm going to do business with you, so can I trust you? Who is this person I'm giving all my money to? And most, you know, when I first started, I didn't get how important your bio was in doing business. So I had a pretty generic bio that was just, my business name was Radical Business at the time. So it was like, Radical Business is blah, blah, blah. Pretty jargony. It was okay, but it had nothing about me personally. Because it never occurred to me that people might actually be interested in who I am as a person and that that might inform their decision. So I read an article about it, and it made a lot of sense to me that a bio might matter. So I redid my bio a bunch of times, and it wasn't until I came across a lady, Nancy Jutton, and she has a website, Bye Bye Boring Bio, BYEBYEBoringBio.com, that I really got how important it was. And I remember I sat down with her to show her my bio. I was so excited. I was so proud of my bio because I'm a marketer. I'm smart. I know what I'm doing. I thought I'd written a pretty good bio, and I showed it to her, and she just tore it to shreds lovingly and helped me rebuild it, and she loves it now, and I love it. I think it's much stronger. So your bio is important because, first of all, if you're going to do any PR and the media is going to reach out to you, they are going to go to your bio. They're going to be using that. If you're going to do any speaking gigs and people are going to introduce you, your bio is what they're going to use to introduce you. The bio is how people are going to get to know you on a human level on the website and learn a bit about you beyond just the boring list of, you know, accreditations you've received. Because most bios are pretty boring. They're pretty they're either really braggy and over the top of how great I am, or they're just really dull, like Jim went to this college, got this certification, did this. And there's so much more that can be involved in it. So I don't want to go too much into it because there are two resources I'd recommend that are the best for this. One is Bye Bye Boring Bio. .com, Nancy Jutton. It's one of the most kick-ass workbooks I've ever seen. Gives tons of questions that you can answer and a lot of before and after examples. And I think what you'll find is you'll read the before versions and you'll think they're good. And then you'll read the after and you'll see, like, wow, you'll see how much better it is. Another one is called thenewaboutme.com. Thenewaboutme.com. And that's a guy, Michael Margolis. And he also has a website, getstoried.com. He's all about storytelling and marketing. How do you take your life story and turn that into your bio? Really profound. And here's what's interesting. So the homepage and the bio, I consider to be like the marketing dojo. They are like the because the homepage have to have your platform clear. Or rather, I'd say the clearer it is, the better your homepage is going to be. And it's so you can't fake it on the homepage. It's either going to be clear or not. And the bio, you really got to be clear about who you are and what you're offering and your journey. And this whole question about who we're reaching and our deepest wounds being our truest niche, your bio page is a chance to dig into that in a way that you may have never done before. I guarantee you, your life story is so rich and so compelling to the people who you're going to be working with. It's so much more relevant than you think, and it creates so much more resonance than you think. Tara asks, do you think the blogs as a homepage are okay? And Allison responded, that might risk being too much about us and not about them. I agree with Allison. I have a very strong opinion about this. I would say unless you're like an uber celebrity that everybody already knows and they're going to the page for you, they already know all about you and your story, I would not have a blog. Because the blog is all about you and your theories. And there's, you know, you've got like 3 seconds for people to to grab people when they hit your website. And let's say the most recent blog post just is a little bit off topic or whatever. So yeah, I think the homepage should be about them and their experience. If you look at my homepage, you'll see a welcome video on marketingforhippies.com. And I just got featured by this woman who's a big social media genius, and she said it was the best homepage video she'd ever seen. So there. And I'll post some things about homepage videos as well, because I've got some thoughts and opinions about those, because they can either go really well or really badly. Yeah. So your homepage and your bio, consider those not immediate homework for the next call, because it's a big thing, but consider those your marketing dojo. If you can figure out the content for those two, the rest gets pretty easy. So we've got your website, specifically focusing on your homepage. Oh, and also, check out clientattractingwebsites.com in terms of the content for the rest of the website. Clientattractingwebsites.com. And that's a colleague of mine, Juliet Austin in Vancouver, and she does has worked specifically with psychotherapists and practitioners around their marketing. She's got some really smart things to say. And also check out heartofbusiness.com. It's a colleague of mine, Mark Silver. Those of you who know him know that he's just the greatest thing ever. So heartofbusiness.com. And he's got a thing under his products, you have to dig around for it a bit, called Creating Heart-Centered Websites. So creating heart-centered websites, just brilliant. So if you're looking for resources to really take your web page to the next level, lovable homepage, bye-bye boring bio, the new about me, clientattractingwebsites.com, and then heartofbusiness.com for his creating a lovable homepage. Yeah, so there's that. Number three is the photo. So I didn't used to think photos were important, and I had a photo on my website that I thought was pretty good. I was really proud of it. I got it for improv, like as a headshot, and put it on my website. And people would start coming up to me during the breaks of the workshop, say, "Hey, Ted, so we're coming back from lunch at 2:30, right? Cool. And I hate the photo on your website." Just like awkwardly inserted, and it was terrible. And I'm not going to show you that photo, but or maybe did I already? I don't think I did. I'm not going to. You can't make me. Anyways, I got some new photos done. Having a really good photo matters. People are increasingly buying from people, not from corporations. There's definitely a huge shift I think you'd all resonate with, where people don't want to buy from these faceless corporations. They want to buy from a human being. And if they can't see who you are, it's disconcerting. If I go to a website and there's no photo of the person, it's disconcerting. If I see an ad and there's no photo of the person, less compelling than if there is a photo. So yeah, it matters. And whatever the island B is, this is something to think about for the photo. Whatever your island B is, the photo should capture that. Whatever your point of view and your why is, the photo should capture that. Whoever you are, your quirk, the photo should capture that. So, you know, this sounds simple. First of all, of course, your photo should be recent, up to date. You know, there's good online dating advice as well. But if you're all about passion, excitement, and adventure, and your photo seems really chill, it's just a disconnect. If you're all about being peaceful and chill, but your photo is really intense, it's not going to work. So this is where it's worth trading with a really good local photographer. Go through their portfolio, find somebody whose work you love, do a trade, or pay for it. It's worth it to have that photo that that grabs people. And Lishui and Helen have both given a shout out to Toronto's Donna Santos. And if you want to see examples of great headshots, go to donnasantos.com, donnasantos.com. She did my headshots. She's gotten some of the best photos I've ever seen of some of my clients. So yeah, check that out. And Lauren, to answer your question, yes, I'll be posting links of all these things after the call. But it's going to slow me down if I do it right now because my internet's being a little slow. So your photo. So we've got website. Is the description of what you do. We need to be able to describe what we do in a way that lands for people. For most holistic practitioners, this is like the challenge. How to say what you do in a way that doesn't have people just go glassy-eyed and say, oh, that's interesting. I need to get some more punch. I'll be right back. And then they never come back, of course. So there are two big blunders that people make when articulating what they do. The first is they talk all about their modality. They talk about the bow. What do you do? Oh, I do this unique combination of Reiki, Shiatsu, trigger, and the work that reconnects. Nobody cares. Nobody knows what those words mean. And even people who know what those words mean may not see the relevance to them. So talking about the boat is the first blunder. The second blunder is too much jargon. Using all sorts of, I don't know, sailor speak, like you're on a boat and you're talking about a sailor word, jargon. In every industry, in every scene, there's a certain amount of lingo that is very meaningful to everyone inside it, but not meaningful to anyone else. Like in the holistic scene, the words like integral, resonant, alkaline, being in balance, energy. These words mean a lot to us and have a certain, we have a certain understanding, but they mean different things to other people or nothing. And so when we use too much jargon, it just confuses the hell out of people. So we want to be really mindful of that. One of the exercises I'll do at my workshops is I'll have people articulate what they do and describe it without using the title of what they do, but also without using any jargon. And that is like a lot harder than it sounds to take all the jargon out and to not really talk about the boat at all or very much. And yet what people are coming to us for usually isn't the boat in the first place, it's the journey. So this is a big, big topic. And to help you with it, I've got a workbook. It's like a 30-page workbook. I'm going to be selling it soon. I've just got to make a few tweaks. It's basically done. I could probably release it now, but I want to tweak a few things. And then there's a 5-step process that you can go through in articulating what you do. And I'm going to give you the quick overview. We're not going to go into it, but you can check out the workbook, which I'll be sending out as a link to you. So you can go into it more deeply. And it's got a bunch of real life examples, mostly from holistic practitioners. So you can see how they've done it. The important thing when articulating what we do is the not just what we say, but the order and sequence that we say it in. The syntax of it, that matters. So most people, I think, get the syntax wrong. There are 5 things, basically, that people need to know in order. First thing they need to know is who is it for? Is this for people like me or people I know? Secondly, the problem. Can this help people like me with a problem that I have, symptoms that I have, or help friends of mine with problems they have? 3 is the result. Can it help me get a result that I want or help a friend get a result that they want? So you'll notice in those first 3, who, problem, result, we've basically got the journey. So that's the first thing that I think needs to be named when we're describing what we do is that journey, which is why you can see we spent so much time on the platform so far. Then they need to know a story, an example, a case study. The most powerful story we can share is our own story. You know, here's what got me into this. Here's the results that I got from it. Because our own story is usually there's so much energy and passion there and so much credibility to be built from it. So we can tell we can also very compellingly tell the story of a client. This client came to me. They had this situation. We did this work. Here's what happened as a result of it. Third kind of story we can share is maybe a story of a teacher or somebody else. Because maybe you do a modality. You're just new. You haven't really gotten a lot of work yet or results. But you could say, well, you know, my teacher, he worked with this one person, and here's this result that happened because of it. So, again, who, problem, result, a story, an example of what you do, and then fifth, how you do it. And that's where you could name the modality if you wanted to, and I would suggest that you probably don't need to. Because when we get to that point of how we articulate what we do, there are usually some really basic things that people need to know about what you do or how you do it. they want to know things how do you do what you do? Is it over the phone or is it in person? Is it half an hour or is it like a 90-minute thing? Is it are you sitting down in a chair? Or are you going to be lying down on a table? Are you going to be naked? Are they touching you? Are you hooked up to a machine? Are all these things happening at once? You know, sign me up. So there are some real fundamental things. So how does that sound in a sentence? Here's the cookie cutter sentence that, and again, you're going to get this in much more detail with other options of how to articulate yourself. But in a cookie cutter sentence, fill in the blanks, it would sound like this. You know how blank kinds of people struggle with blank kinds of problems? Well, what I help them do is get blank kinds of results. For example, insert a story. And the way that I do that is blank. So once again, you know how blank kinds of people struggle with blank kinds of problems? Well, what I help them do is get blank kind of results. For example, blank. And the way that I do that is blank. So very simple and very powerful. Works extremely well, especially when the platform is clarified and we're not trying to reach everybody. So I'll give a few quick examples of how that might sound with a real thing. So for me, you know how a lot of holistic practitioners struggle with their marketing and getting enough clients, and they know they need to market, but they don't, and they keep putting it off, and marketing kind of feels gross to them. Well, what I help them do is figure out strategies to get more of the kind of clients they're looking for without doing anything that feels gross or cost a fortune. For example, I would share a story, and the way I do that is mostly through workshops and one-on-one consulting. A parenting coach. A parenting coach might say, you know how a lot of parents struggle with being either too authoritarian or too permissive? Well, what I help them do is figure out parenting strategies that feel authentically right for them. And just want to pause a second. Michelle, yes, the cookie cutter thing that will be, it's written up in the workbook. Oh, Tim Emerson says stories. I have them finally. Yeah. Story. Oh, Tim, if you've got stories, that's you're all good. And everyone, sorry, Mike, I'm not responding to what you're posting because my computer is being super slow. So I think I might actually do a log off and log back on thing and give you assignment so I can actually follow what you're doing instead of trying to track it on my iPhone here. You know, a lot of parents struggle with being either too authoritarian or too permissive. What I help parents do is figure out strategies that feel authentically right for them and help them stay loving even when their kids are testing them the most. There was a guy who did this work with belief repatterning stuff, whatever that is, and he said, you know how a lot of single dads go through this painful divorce and they've got this terrible relationship with their ex and there's lawsuits involved and it's just awful and the kid's acting out? Well, what I help them do is figure out how to recreate a better relationship with their ex than they had when they were together, whether or not they get back together. Those are so clear. Most of you are actually a lot clearer to being able to do this than you might think you are. So that's the an example of the description. Again, you're going to get somebody with a lot of help for this. So that's number four. Number five, your email database. So the email database is really important. So I'm just talking an Excel spreadsheet, but taking things from beyond just being on customer, you know, paper intake forms that are in a filing cabinet or a folder and putting them on the computer, pay a teenager to do this, bribe them with promises of beer and pizza. You know, don't buy them the beer, you know, teach them to live with disappointment. But if you don't know how to use Excel genuinely, there's probably a teenager in your life who does. Get them to do it. But get that stuff on in a spreadsheet. You want it to be able to track various things. The date they last saw you, their name, their contact info, their birthday, the date they first came to see you, their gender, their birth date, so that you can track the age, it can give you so much, you know, what they've spent on you, who they've referred, who they were referred by. All of these things can be important pieces of the container or of the email database. Having that information and being able to organize and sort it can tell you so much about your clientele. You can also have a column or, you know, a place where you track who are your favorite clients. And that can give you the ability to track them and to stay in touch with them a little extra special maybe than you might with everyone. If you ever want to sell your practice to somebody else, your email database is like the only thing they care about. Because the website, the bio, photo, description, they're probably going to have to change all of that. But what they won't change and can't change is your database. The most valuable resource you have as a business is your customer list and your relationship with those people. So this is one of those things that investing time into it, you get zero return on immediately, but it pays you back forever and ever and ever. Being able to segment it and organize it in different ways, there's so much you can do with it. If you had a promotion that was specifically for women, you can at least give them a heads up. If there's one that's really only relevant for a certain age range, you can give them first dibs before opening it up to the rest of the list. So much. You can start to notice who's referring the most people. And then maybe thank them, because if you don't track it, sometimes you don't notice. But if you start asking every single client, how did you, and this is something everyone should do, every single client is to ask them, how did you hear about me? And not just from a friend, that's great. Who was it? You know, to get the details. Because it's easy to have all this business referred and have no idea where it's coming from. And it's important that we know where it's coming from so that you can actually acknowledge and thank those people. Number six is a hubs database. And we're going to talk about hubs a lot next week, on the next call when we talk about paths. But basically, you can try to reach people cold with no relationship, or you can be reaching out through it sounds like the sound is cutting out. That's terrible. My computer is being wonky. So sorry about that, everyone. Tell you what I'm going to do. Everyone stay on the line. I'm going to hang up and call back in. So this may take a few minutes. And if me getting off knocks you off, then I'm going to invite you to just call back in so we can get a clean line on this and a clean recording. Let me suggest that you chat amongst yourselves in the meantime or get a cup of tea. I'll be right back in a few minutes, and I'll go 5 minutes later because of that. Okay, be right back. Hey, everybody, I'm back. Sorry for the delay. Are you all on mute? I think so. Yep. Okay. Phew. Well, I hope you enjoyed your little break. Let's see where we're at. Welcome back. Thank you, Helen. Hello, Tim. Good to be back. Jennifer, can you hear me now? Hope you can hear me. Okay, I think we're all good. Wonderful. Man, the poor transcriber having to transcribe all this nonsense. So just to recap. So we've talked about the sales funnel. Or no, we haven't talked about that. We're talking about the website, the bio, photo, description, email database, and we're on the Hubs database. So the Hubs database, again, it's one thing to try to promote yourself directly. It's another to be introduced by other people. It's much easier. When I went to Ottawa about a year ago, I had like 100 people sign up for my workshops, and I spent about 2 hours on that because I connected with this woman who was just a mega, mega hub in Ottawa in the holistic scene. And she hosted the workshops for me and filled them, completely sold them out through her list. If I tried to reach those people directly, I would have been lucky to get 10 or 20. With her help, we got 100. So, you know, when we look at why do people open an email, it's not the subject line. It's who it's from. So who people hear about things from has a huge difference. There's an old Scottish Gaelic proverb that translates as, if the messenger is worthy, then the business is. There are some people that when they recommend a book or a band, you just automatically download their music or check it out. You don't even question it anymore. You know their taste is so good and so consistent. There are other people, if they recommend a movie or something, you're like, wow, let me write that down so I can make sure that I never see that movie. You know, thank you for your consistent, terrible taste in all things cultural. I'm saying that there are these things, places and people that are hubs. We'll talk about this more tomorrow. But what I'm saying in particular in this case is to not just know that they're out there, to not just hear about them, to actually make a database separate from your email database, a spreadsheet, or some way that you keep track of all these people that are hubs for you, a way that you can organize them. There may be multiple lists. This is what kills me. So the thing that makes any marketing path work twice as well, 10 times as well, is attaching a hub to it. Meaning, yes, you can write something. Writing is a wonderful way of marketing. You can put that lonely on your blog that nobody visits, or you can put it as an article on a blog of somebody who's extremely well-connected in your scene, or a blog that they all read, a newspaper, a magazine they all read, and you're likely to get so much more response. If you go networking for clients, that's one thing. If you go networking for hubs, it's much more powerful. If you try to host a workshop yourself, hard. Get somebody else who's a hub to host it, easy. So attaching a hub to any particular marketing approach works better. And what kills me is I see people talking and somebody will say, oh, you should talk to this person. Basically, they're a real hub for you. And I'll see the other person be like, oh, wow, thanks, great. And they don't write it down. They don't make a note of it. And they don't keep track of it. This should be like a religious practice in a business. Anytime you hear about somebody who is or could be a potential hub for you, write it down, have a space you put it. And here's the thing, again, it's a container. You want a container to put those names into so you can forget about them for a while. And then when it's time, you can go into that bucket and pull out the names and start doing the outreach. You may not be ready now, and that's fine, but start collecting them now. My brother does stand-up comedy. His website is ctobylive.com. If you want to check it out, you'll immediately notice the resemblance between us. But he does stand-up comedy. And every stand-up comedian I know has a book in their back pocket where whenever or iPhone or whatever these days, where if they have a funny joke, they write it down and they forget about it. Because the best jokes come randomly at these moments, and if you don't capture it in that moment, you lose it. So certainly for your business, having something like that, great. For hubs, extra, extra, extra important. So, website, bio, photo, description, email database, hubs database, testimonials and case studies is next. That's number 7, testimonials and case studies. There are certain things you just cannot and should not say about yourself. That it would be really gauche and like arrogant of you to say about yourself, but if somebody else says it, it's great. So having testimonials is important. The challenges with testimonials, most people use them poorly, I think, where it's just like they say something like, awesome, says AJ from Sist. And you're like, who the hell is AJ? And awesome, what, you know? There's not a lot of heft to it. So if you're going to use testimonials, a few things to make them work better. Here's the full mail deal. Depending on your situation, certain aspects of this you won't be able to use. Number one, have more than just one line. Have a little paragraph or whatever, or two. If you go to my website, marketingforhippies.com, and you check out the, I think there's a testimonials tab or something. God, I don't even know my own website. Terrible. Pulling it up now. Yeah, testimonials. You'll see that there are a few things that I've done that I think help. Number one is there's a few paragraphs from the person, not just one. Number two, there's a photo of the person. I think having a photo of the person, if you can, makes it a lot more real and more human. Number three, I've taken some of the text out of it and turned it into a headline for the testimonial. So you'll notice I've just got I've got way more testimonials than this. I've just stopped collecting them really or using them for different things because I have too many. So, but I already have so many here and people aren't going to read them all being real, but they might scan them and maybe they'll see somebody they recognize, but they might see a headline and something about it grabs them and pulls them in. And the last part, number four, is you have full attribution. The more you can have as info about them, their website, who they are, what they've done, the better. So that adding those things will make a testimonial pop a lot more. I've also, some of these you'll notice the person actually has their phone number in it. So you can call them directly and ask them questions. You'd be shocked at how many of your clients are actually down with just like giving their phone number or direct contact info. Like, contact me if you have any questions. I did this for my friend Ari Galper with Unlock the Game, and I had my phone number up, and I get funny calls from people in Ireland like calling me up to ask me my honest opinion about Ari's stuff. And of course, I loved it, and I would rave about it. So that's a part of the container too, the testimonials, and then case studies. So case studies, Tim, you'll be happy about these. Case studies are the stories of your clients, the before, during, and after. When they came to see you, I would say case studies are more powerful than testimonials in the end. If you can combine them, even better. One of my colleagues, Casey in Seattle, and my computer's working fast, so I can post this up. I'll post it. She has a thing called Stories That Sell. So in terms of using case studies in your marketing, she's got some really brilliant thoughts about how you collect them and how you can all the different ways that you can use them. I would say there's probably nothing more powerful than using stories in your marketing at the end of the day. Even TED Talks that are about new ideas are always – they always have stories in them. And also GetStoried.com, again, my friend Michael Margolis, awesome dude, will tell you a lot about how to use stories. So case studies, so powerful. Sometimes what you do is so complicated and so like you've got so many theories. There's such an in-depth point of view. But if you can just tell a simple example of how somebody came and what you noticed, it helps a lot. And Tim says, yes, that does make me happy. Does the happy Tim dance. Yeah. Sometimes even when your initial like, here's the journey and all that, it's kind of fuzzy. You tell a story, people see themselves in the story. And great. Lauren has just posted an example of testimonials. So you can check what she posted. Lucia said, depends on the nature of the business, though. In my case, confidentiality is important, so they won't allow me to put a photo or a name, even just to ask is a problem. That's totally understood. Yeah, you might be able to do some of these as anonymous case studies where you don't use their photo. And then I think it's fine. You can say, obviously, due to the sensitive nature of this topic, I can't give the names and all that, but I thought I'd still share some stories and still get the people's permission. You can change all of the details, the city, the age, things to have the stories work. And clients often are open to that. Do the best you can. But case studies and testimonials are very powerful. So that's number seven. Number eight, the sales funnel. The sales funnel is one of the ideas that sort of blew my mind the most in marketing. And this is one of these things that you may have heard of, and I'm going to invite you to hear it again at another level. So I'm going to put up a website you'll see for pinkspoonmarketing.com. Pinkspoonmarketing.com. It's a colleague of mine, Andrea Lee, who's just a lovely, lovely lady. And she's the one that sort of introduced me to this idea of a sales funnel. Let me actually just pull up an image of this so you can follow along. Images. Let's see. Here we go. Okay. So it'll just take me one moment. Saving image. Oh, there are a couple. Okay, I'm going to put up a couple of images so it is being posted soon. Okay. There we go. So it's just posted. So if you refresh the page, you'll see it. I'm just grabbing another one that is another example. And post it. Okay, so now we've got those both up. So you can refresh your page and you'll see two little triangles there. Sales funnels. And and Lishui was asking if the stories that sell is along the lines, start with why, it's a different thing, I would say. Probably there's some overlap, but it's a different kind of thing. So the sales funnel. You'll notice on the image on top, you'll see it's like an ice cream store. You've got the pink spoon, an ice cream cone, a little bucket of ice cream, the ice cream cake, and the calendar, which is like for some ice cream stores, believe it or not, have a club you can join where every month you get mailed a new delicious flavor of ice cream. Or not mailed, or like you get access to it, and it costs a bunch of money because it's really rare. But you get that. And so there are different levels of the funnel. You'll notice it's wider at the top and narrower at the bottom. Wider at the top because, of course, more people are going to try the free thing. Less people will try the cone. Less people will get a gallon. And very few people will go for the club. Think of it as a yoga studio. The pink spoon would be a free class. The ice cream cone might be a drop-in class. The bucket of ice cream might be a 10-pass or a monthly pass. The cake might be a weekend workshop, and then the club would be the teacher training. And interesting fact, if you take a teacher training out of the sales funnel of most yoga studios, it will collapse within 6 months to a year. It just totally will not last. It's that important. So there's the bronze, silver, gold sort of levels. So I think we've seen this, all sorts of places. You'll see the image below, and it gives you a sense of what the price points might be. So at the free thing, the pink spoon is free. The next level is like from like anywhere from $5 to $50, then $50 to $200 for the level after that, $200 to $500, and then the bottom level $500 plus is an example. May vary. But the important thing is having levels. Here's why this matters so much. And by the way, we are probably going to go over time on this call. Just because there's so much content, your brains will hurt. You'll thank me later. There's a few reasons this matters so much. First of all, consider the impact of trying to remove levels from the sales funnel. Think of it just as pink spoons. Cover with your hand the whole sales funnel, and all you've got is the pink spoons. Well, you're kind of popular for a while, but you're broke at the end, and you got no ice cream. So really frustrating. And it's actually really frustrating for people who then discover a flavor that they like and they're like, I want more. And you're like, well, you can have another little sample. but that's all they can have as a sample, eventually that gets very frustrating for people. So Tim was curious why the yoga studio would collapse without the teacher training, because that's where most of their money comes from. You know, you pay just so much per class. The yoga studio actually doesn't make that much money with the classes because the teacher needs to be paid. There's overhead. Teacher trainings are like thousands of dollars. So that's where they make most of their money. But imagine covering the sales funnel, except the calendar at the bottom of the club. Well, that would be like walking into a yoga studio and you're saying, hey, I was wondering if I can do a drop-in class. And they say, weird, we don't do that. But if you'd like to sign up for our $3,000 teacher training, you can. You get what a huge leap that is. To walk into a studio where you don't know the teachers, you don't know their philosophy, you don't know their anything about their platform or who they are, and they're immediately expecting you to make that kind of a leap. But here's the really compelling piece that will just nail some of you. Take out everything, cover up the pink spoon, cover up everything below. I would suggest that the situation most holistic practitioners are in, most permaculture practitioners are in a position of just selling ice cream cones. That sounds like this. Hey, thanks for coming in for the session. Would you like to book another session? And then would you like to book another session? And literally just selling ice cream cones. And I want to submit that, A, that isn't as safe for people as you'd think, because they don't know if they want to try the whole cone. They just want to try a sample first. But also, so it's not safe for them, and it's not that sustainable for you, because now you're stuck just trying to get new people in all the time, trying to rebook people, having that uncomfortable conversation. So having a sales funnel makes it much safer for people to engage at the level that feels comfortable for them, and also makes it much more sustainable for you. So I'll tell you a bit about my personal experience with this. When I first started off, I was just doing workshops. I had no pink spoons, and it was kind of hard to get people in my workshops. And I had one workshop, this weekend workshop called the Radical Business Intensive. Then I started developing some pink spoons. I came up with my niche workbook. I came up with, which I'm redoing right now, the Horrible 100, the Radical Business 180. There are these early diagnostics that are a part of the ebook that you can download on my website. And so I had those, and those were great. And then I had this intro that I was doing, and one day I was like, I just need to record this and get it transcribed so I can offer it as a pink spoon, as a free thing on my website. So I had that, and people immediately loved having that. And I combined the quizzes plus the transcript of that plus a few other things into this like 200-page ebook, which is overkill. You don't need that for Pink Spoon. Might be too much. But I get a lot of people saying they love it. So I added that. And then I noticed that I was getting a lot of people who are holistic practitioners. So I created this workshop, Marketing 101 for Holistic Practitioners. And so that was another revenue stream. So now I had this sort of more green business thing and a holistic practitioner workshop. Then I noticed, then I created on like how to create the free gift on your website, basically how to create the pink spoon on your website. If you go to my product section, you can get that for like $27 to $67. I'll put the link up for that so you can see it. But I created that. And that was a little bit additional revenue. Then I got this crazy idea to turn my weekend workshop, the Marketing 101 for Holistic Practitioners, into this 6-week online course, which I've been enjoying so much and that that you're a part of. So, and then that's been really good, you know, financially, sustainably, et cetera. My situation used to be, I'd be like, well, I'm broke. I guess I need to hit the road again and do some workshops. And this time, because of this, God bless you. Thank you all for signing up and supporting me. Because of that, I'm actually hitting the road with money in my bank instead of, you know, like, well, the tank is dry. Must go tour again. So I'll put in the comment below the sales funnel. Or actually, I'll just put a new comment here. So how to create your own pink spoons. For you to check out if that feels like a fit. So as my sales funnel has become more robust, I can't tell you like the relief it feels like. It feels like the boat is getting so much more solid. It's not leaking as much. And it's, again, not just being safer for people to check me out, but to hold me. Also, of course, I created a bunch of these case studies that are on my website for free. My blog has become a huge pink spoon, And the great thing is, as a blog, I'm getting to a point where I'm able to take some of those posts from my blog and now start to move them into product. So I'll take them off my blog, turn it into a product that I can charge for. But I got to share it, and it got to be useful for people in the meantime, which I feel really wonderful about. So having the sales funnel thought out is important. And let me – I want to give you some criteria here for the pink spoon, six types of pink spoons that you might have, and also three things that you might have in the rest of the sales funnel. So for the pink spoon, some of the here's the criteria. It must be free. It's got to cost them nothing. It must be risk-free for them as much as possible. It's got to be no cost for you and no time for you, ideally. And it's got to give them genuine value. It's got to give them a genuine taste of what you do. So free, risk-free, genuine value, and just easy on you or none of your time. Ideally, it can be sampled while you sleep. So obviously, with that criteria, we're looking mostly at online things. And here are six types of pink spoons. I always forget one of these, but I'll remember all of them this time. So the first thing is video. Online video, so powerful. YouTube is the second most used search engine on the planet next to Google, and it's owned by Google, maybe, which is why it's ranked so high. But videos are so powerful. You probably have had this experience where you're looking for a band or you want to check them out, and you go to YouTube and you check out their video online. Byron Katie, who wrote the book Loving What Is, she's got a ton of videos of her doing the work with people, sitting down, kind of counseling them. Little 10-minute clips on YouTube. There are a ton of them that you can see, and it's so immensely credibility building. I've got like 2 hours of video on my website where I just recorded the intro I did, and I just gave it away for free. I can't tell you what that's done to build the credibility and give people a taste of who I am. Video is so powerful for letting people get a sense of your vibe, who you are. It's a really beautiful, powerful thing, I think. Video, it can be how-tos. A coffee shop might say, here's how to make the perfect cup of coffee. A gardening store might say, here's how to pin back your plants. You know, if you're doing a talk, you might as well get it videoed and put it online. You can do just an update of what's happening for you. If you've got a workshop coming up, you could record a video that gives them a sense. That's a bit more of a commercial. So for pink spoons, though, we are thinking about things that are useful and valuable. So think about the things that you know that are the best, that are the coolest, most useful. Could you turn that into a video? Again, if you're not sure how to do this, there's a teenager in your life who is already doing this, and they may be a child, and you may not be aware of it, and this might be a good parent-child conversation about their secret YouTube channel. So video is one pink spoon. Audio is another one. So this could be like a downloadable meditation. It could be a recording of a talk you've done. It could be a sample of your music, some way that they could listen to you and get a sense of podcast. Where they listen to you, a radio show on the internet that's free. Those are all audio pink spoons. Next would be a written thing, so like an ebook, a special report, a white paper. And again, I've got this 200-page one, overkill. It just has to be 5 to 20 pages just to give them a taste of what you do, yeah? And Allison, if you're having trouble, you're saying you're having trouble thinking of the pink spoons, if you're like, what would it be for me? Check out the ebook that I've got, because I think it could be really useful. Deb was asking, what's the sense of how important the quality is of the video, professional versus self-made? This is my take on it at this point. I think for your homepage video and a bio video, ideally those should be professionally done, because this is like the first impression. I think for ongoing things like a video blog, just kind of useful tip videos, I think those can just be done on a webcam. I think just the more important it is in terms of promotion and such, the better that it's professional. But for most of it, just a webcam, just, you know, do it, get it out. We've got video, audio, written. Fourth is an email series. And this is the type of thing, a little more technical, but where, let's say, they sign up on your email list, and then every week for the next 7 weeks, they get another email. It's all automated. You don't have to do anything, you know, once it's... The advantage to this is it's kind of dripped in slowly, so they get a chance to absorb it instead of it being in one sort of ebook at one time. Ideally, I'm going to add that to my thing I'm lazy, but it would be a really great idea for me. So emails that get dripped in over time once a week. And so it could be like 7 tips on how to deal with X. Yeah. 7 tips on how to achieve this, get up to island B. 7 principles, 7 distinctions, 7 blunders that people make around dealing with this type of thing. And here's an important thing. The pink spoons are about the journey and helping them on the journey. It's not about the boat. So if you're Allison, you're saying you're having trouble thinking about pink spoons for a business like massage, that's about the boat. So again, think about the journey that you're taking people on. Could you be offering pink spoons around that? So we've got video, audio, written, an email series, and a quizzes and assessments are another one. Quizzes and assessments, I'm a huge fan of. Things where people can sort of diagnose themselves, where are they strong, where are they weak, are really powerful as pink spoons. Because sometimes people have a problem that they don't even know they have, but through doing a quiz, they can sort of figure out, oh, I've got this problem. Could be, what personality type are you? What kind of parent are you? What kind of, you know, what are your strengths? What are your blind spots? Think of Myers-Briggs, the DISC model, the Enneagram, all these types of things, astrological. That's not really a quiz. That's the one question quiz. What day were you born? Answer. So quizzes and assessments can be really powerful. And there's a cool website that I would commend to you checking out. It's called assessmentgenerator.com. Probably got to have something better than this, but this is a great place to start. And they are how to build the assessments, but also how to turn those into marketing, which I think is really, really smart. So I've just posted that on the website as well, assessmentgenerator.com. So, okay, so Tim says, so many people are doing the same thing that when I see yet another person with a call series and daily, weekly email, I end up deleting, unsubscribing from almost all of them. I get so many emails. Tad's one of the handful I kept. may it continue to be so. So here's this is where the platform, I think, comes in. It's not so much about the format. I think so much of it is about the content. I think also with pink spoons, it's good to have some pink spoons that people don't have to opt in for. So you notice on my website, there's 4 basic pink spoons: blog, case studies, the ebook, and the videos. The ebook is the only thing they have to opt in for. The rest of it they can just check out, and I never knew they were there. I just think it's good to give people something they can opt in for. That's kind of a trade, like, hey, if you're willing to take a risk on me, I'll give you this free thing that's going to be useful to you, and that can give you something to check me out. So Lorraine says, yeah, to non-opt-ins. Yeah. And by the way, I just think strategically that's a better way to go. Just ethics aside, I think strategically it's better to give people a mix of things they can opt in for and things they can just get for free, for safety, for them to check you out. Because, yeah, like Allison said, people start to resent opt-ins after a while when that's the only way to check them out. That's my take on it anyways at this point. Buzz's assessment is awesome. The last one, number 6, is sort of it's pink spoonish. I wouldn't say the full pink spoon, which is a free ticket to an event where people can check you out in person. So free ticket to a class, to a workshop, to a talk that you're doing. It's less pink spoony because it's a risk. First of all, it takes your time and effort. They have to spend a lot more time and effort. They have to take the risk of going to a place. What if it's a really pushy sales pitch? So it's a little less safe, but still great. So those are 6 examples of pink spoons: video, audio, written, email series, quizzes and assessments, and free tickets. And what's great is you can do packages of them. You don't have to just pick one. You can do multiple of them together. The more, I don't think you're going to have too many pink spoons is the basic thing. The more pink spoons you have, the better. In terms of the rest of the funnel, there are 3 P's. So it's all P's: pink spoons and then 3 other P's: packages, programs, and products. Packages, programs. So when we talk about packages, there are basically 2 kinds of packages. One is packages meaning like a series of blank sessions. Just getting into using those. This is where I really got something from my colleague Bill Barron with his Masters of Enrollment thing. It's just coming up with a package, like a series of sessions, maybe some other things added in. And when you're talking with people, instead of trying to enroll people in a ice cream cone, why not try offering them something bigger? Or at some point to have that you can offer. I was in Winnipeg and I had this situation where there's a woman who was a astrologer, and she said her thing was she just sold the ice cream cones. Basically, she's like, I read people's life chart, and that's it. What else is there? You know, I just read their life chart, and then we're done. And for her, the beauty of where she was coming from was this immense place of integrity. She didn't want to sell people more than they needed. She was tired of seeing people just get roped into, you know, coming, feeling like they had to come back again and again. So God bless her. But then what was interesting was this woman in the back of the room raised her hand and said, well, can I just say something? I saw an astrologer, got my life chart read, and then I felt totally ditched by her because I wanted more. I wanted to talk more about this month what's happening and this month what's happening with the stars, and can we talk about relationships 1 month and money 1 month, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it kind of blew the astrologer's mind that somebody might have felt that way. And I said, well, how often did you want to talk to her? She's like, once a month. I said, on the phone? Yeah, just on the phone. How much would you pay? She's like, I don't know, whatever her rates were. So I asked the astrologer lady in the front. I said, well, what do you charge? $100 an hour. So I went back to the lady. I said, are you saying you would have paid $50 per month for a year? $600 a year, maybe $550 with a packaging discount. And you would have paid that. And she's like, yeah, that would have been so awesome. A half hour phone call every month to be like, oh, I'm struggling with my relationship. This is what's happening in the planets. Or, you know? So I was like, well, first two, you two need to talk. but second of all, I was like, do you get how much money got lost here? And how much more there might be in the future just by offering a package of follow-up things that this woman clearly wants? Yeah, so packages could be the number of sessions, and it could also be a package around a particular journey. So it could be the lower back pain package, the recovering from heartbreak package, the what the hell am I doing with my life package. Yeah, so Yanina just beat me to it. You're so clever. Packages can have specifically stated goals, which are really appealing. Right, bio. Exactly. How would packages work for a doctor that takes insurance, Tracy asked. I have no idea. I invite everyone else to pile onto that conversation. I don't know. I wish I did. So packages can be the number of sessions or around a thing. And think of the packages you're making a present for people. You're putting a basket of things together that you're so excited that's going to help them get to where they want to go, that's going to help them make this journey and sustain them in this journey. I think why packages are so important is, you know this probably as well or better than me, seeing somebody for one session is usually not going to get them the result. And we have all this integrity about not selling people more than they need, but we often end up kind of offering people less than they need. My uncle was a salesperson across Canada, my great uncle, and he had this reputation where he'd go in the stock to stock the cans and soups in these stores, and they would give him orders 12 of these and 12 of these. And he'd be like, but you already have six. You only need six more. And they never had a salesperson have that integrity to actually not sell them more than they need. So that's beautiful. But it's also, I think it's important if we're going to be really guiding people on this journey from Island to A to B, to have a very real and honest conversation with them about what that journey is going to take. I think that that matters. It's like, okay, you're here on Island A. You really want to be on Island B? Here's, in your case, it's this kind of a journey. This is 12 sessions, or this is a year, or this is 2 years. And this isn't about pressuring anyone. This is a really important distinction. We're not saying, and therefore you need to sign up. We're just putting it out as an option if it feels like a fit. And this is where the sales funnel comes in, because sometimes, yeah, it might be a 2-year journey and they're not quite ready to commit to that level, but there might be a smaller package they could commit to. And that you can see then if they're a fit for the next level. And so you're both constantly just seeing what's a fit for each of us as we move to the next level. The more of these packages you can put together, the more sustainable you could be. Could you imagine the next 10 clients you sat with, if they all signed up for a series of 12 sessions with a modest discount for that, you get the relief that would be financially. So if you're interested in that, Bill Barron's got a great program, but I would most recommend Mark Silver. He's got a product called the Heart. Let me see if I can find it. Sacred Selling. He's got a home study course called the Sacred Selling, and I just think he's the loveliest man in the world. He's probably one of the spiritually clearest people I've come across in terms of selling. I learn from him every time. I hear from him, and he's like my marketing bromance. The first conversation we had, we spent an hour bitching about The Secret. It was beautiful. So if you're interested in the packages, and how do you sell those, and how do you actually design them and engage in that conversation in more depth, I'd really recommend checking out his work. Just in general, check him out. So the packages, there are products. There might be certain products that you can bring in. Normally, I am like very skeptical about multi-level marketing stuff. My brother, you know, was in Amway and it was terrible for him. So and I've just seen a lot of bad news there. But I'll give an example of a product that a yoga studio used in a way that I thought was interesting. So first of all, you may have products. Those could be information products, ebooks, videos, courses that you come up with. Could be tangible products. Could be nutritional products, etc. And actually, let me just say this about when I say products because and how they relate to packaging. There's a huge difference between like the profitability and how much an essential oil will sell if it's just like, you know, essential oil of this flavor, mint or orange or whatever, versus if it's packaged together around the stress relief oil, sensuality oil, happiness oil or whatever, around a mood or a particular result, an island B. You get it? You get these oils. Those sell like hotcakes. When it's just the essential oil, most people don't know enough about it to know what it's good for. Maybe they really like the smell, but the ones that are around a particular result or tone or mood or vibe tend to do a lot better, the mixes. But so when we talk about products, there was a yoga studio in Calgary, Yoga Santosha. I went there and they had this little, like a green drink on their shelf by the door. And I was like, oh, hey, what's this? And it's like, oh, they're like, it's a multi-level marketing thing. It's just it's like a cellular revitalizing drink, and we just love it. And we found it really good for us. So, but we don't really push it, but it's, you know, it's there. And it's like, well, how do people hear about it at your studio? It's like, oh, they see it and they ask, just like you did right now. And I was like, ah, you got me. I'm like, all right, I'll try your green drink. So I got one of the little bottles, like the ice cream cone level. I bought it. I tried it and I liked it actually. I said, so what happens here? So people buy these every once in a while. They're like, yeah, some people, they buy them and they just every time. And if we see that somebody's buying it a lot, we usually pull them aside and say, look, this is a multi-level marketing thing. And you can, if you really like this, you can get a bigger bottle. You can get a cheaper, less waste, and you can buy it right from the company. If you sign up under us, we make money, you know, and we're thrilled. But if you want, you can also just sign up directly with it. It's just, if you want it, if you like it, you can get a lot cheaper that way. And so every once in a while, somebody does. And so it's a very passive, I think, high integrity way of doing it. But yeah, so you can have products and you can also have programs. So that's workshops, seminars, retreats, et cetera. And this is where this idea of the niche and the who comes in big time, because we're going to talk about niche projects at the end of this extremely long call. But I hope you don't mind going over a bit. You can have these programs. So again, products, packages, programs. The more of those you can develop, the more robust your sales funnel is, the more solid it is. So that's a part of the container. Last two parts of the container. Dear God, there's so much content in this call. Community building initiative. So this is number 9, I think. Let me see. Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So community building initiatives. I think it's a really good idea to think about how you can be building community outside of the sales interactions and the marketing. Because, again, you've got the situation where clients might come see you, and then they're done, you know, and then they leave. And how do you stay in touch with them without just pitching them on something else? I'm a big fan, and this is a sort of an overlap of paths and containers. We'll talk about this more next week. But anything you can do that can build community, that can bring people together, I think. So this could be hosting parties and gatherings for your favorite clients, having an online forum like we're doing here. This is a sort of a last-minute idea, the Facebook group, but I think it's turned out great. Anything that lets people not just talk to you, but talk to each other and build community is wonderful. So this could be things you host, but there also might be things that are happening in the community that you can support because, man, the stronger a community, like word of mouth spreads in communities. The tighter a community is, the faster word of mouth spreads and everybody wins. And yeah, with your client base, sometimes they want to build community with each other. Sometimes they don't. I get it. But consider this, whatever the why is of why you do what you do, they may not be interested in like booking more sessions with you right away, but if they share that why and you can be hosting events that are on that why, they might be very interested. Like there's real why her passion is about the women's empowerment. Do you get a sense of the kind of community building things she could do around women's empowerment that have nothing to do with breast massage that could still have people be in her community, still keep her in touch? Women's circles, movie screenings, book clubs, workshops. She could also host a series of workshops. I was talking with a guy who was a chiropractor in Calgary, and every month his clinic hosts a series of workshops led by other people from other disciplines about wellness and stress and different things that their clients can come to for free. There's a guy who does massage at Graham Stone's in England, a lovely fellow, and he's all about optimism. So he could, if he wanted, host events that are all about positivity and optimism that his clients might want to come to just because they share that passion for it. So when you're thinking about building community, really zone in on both the why and the point of view, and what things could you do to bring people together around that. Number 10, last, possibly most important, are your staying in touch mechanisms. So here's an interesting stat for you that's probably basically accurate for where you live, is so the average person in Calgary refinances their home on average every 5 years. So on the Facebook group, I want you to guess what percentage of people go back to the original mortgage broker. So just take a quick guess. What percent do you think? People refinance every 5 years. A certain percentage of them go back to the original mortgage broker. Some go to a new one. What percent do you think go back to the original mortgage broker? So let's just have some quick guesses. Ten percent, 50%, 5%, 50%, 99%, 80%, 2%, 5% go back, 50%, 90%, none. Tim, so pessimistic. 10%. Yeah. So the prize goes to Margaret Rinaldi, who hits it bang on the nose with 2%. So meaning 98% of people go to a different mortgage broker. So this is like one of these just killer arguments around having a container and staying in touch with people. Why is it that so many people don't go back to another one? Because did your mortgage broker ever stay in touch with you? Probably not. So staying in touch so profoundly in marketing for retention. But how we stay in touch matters. I got this from Robert Middleton with actionplan.com, who's another wonderful marketing guy, very down to earth, nuts and bolts. And his sense was that there's this 80-20 rule, that 80% of how we stay in touch with people should be value, something that helps them on their journey. That earns the right that 20% of what we stay in touch with is a shameless plug for our products and services. Yanina thinks it's because most mortgage brokers are slick jerks. There's probably that too. So we want 80% of what we stay in touch with to be really relevant, valuable stuff that builds our credibility and just helps them. And 20% is a shameless plug. You could probably move that to like a 10-to-1, I've heard as well. The point is the majority, the vast majority of it needs to be useful. If everything they hear from us is a plug that certain people turn off. It's also true with nonprofits. You give money, and then every time you hear from them, they're just asking for more money. That gets old pretty fast. But then that becomes, there's this huge question of like, what the hell is valuable? What could I give out that's valuable? So I'm going to post something. So what is in the 80% of valuable stay in touch material? And so, okay, I've just put up a post. I'm going to invite you to comment underneath this. So the question is, what is in the 80% of valuable stay-in-touch material? What is it that you could be sending? What types of content could you send that is actually really cool, relevant, valuable? And, man, pay attention to this thread, people, because you might get some great ideas for yourself. But yeah, what are some examples of this that could be good content? And there are three types of things, by the way, three main ways I think we stay in touch. One is like a blog, video blog, podcast, that type of thing. But a blog, social media, and an email list. So blog, social media, and an email list. So let's take just a couple minutes, and I want you to just write down, what are examples? So it could be general types of things, or it could be, like, here's a specific example of something I got or I sent out that I think was really kick-ass. Let's take just a few minutes. You guys are all troopers for sticking in so long. I know this is, like, way over time, so you guys are great. But I think this we're on, we'll end in probably 15 minutes. Okay, so a couple of minutes. You guys are doing great. Oh my God, what an amazing list this is. So let's take another minute or so. What are examples of things you could stay in touch with that would they'd be so grateful? Because this is the goal, like with an email newsletter, and honestly, I still think I could do better on this. I think my blog, I feel 100% kick-ass about. My newsletter, I feel like 75% about. But what's the kind of stuff that you could send out that they'd just be like, I'm so fucking glad to be on this email. I'm so glad that I get this blog. I'm so glad I'm friends with this person on social media because of the stuff they post. It's so good. It's so good that I want to share it with people. I forward it to people. It's so useful. I send an email saying thank you. Like, what is that kind of stuff? Because that's the goal here. You guys are coming up with, man, we could spend the whole session doing this, I swear. Wonderful. So I'm going to read some of these out. So follow-up material to the session. Awesome. New information on a subject. Articles. A link to a YouTube clip of a mini meditation. An article. Invitation to a party. Information updates on what's happening in the industry. Awesome. New products on the market that are useful. Cool videos from other people you run across. Advance notice, exclusive access. a discussion board on a website, let them raise issues. Having a swap with other practitioners and offer many complimentary things or coupons. Community support, checking in to see how they're feeling, noticing any changes. Sending them homework, follow-up stuff. Personal reflections on your own healing and learning journey, things that are just nice, an MP3 from my albums, inspiring quotes, asking what they need right now. Yeah, sending a question. What do you need? TED Talk links, the tips, just simple, quick how-to tips on how to de-stress, how to shift out of being in a bad mood, how to be present, the cute photos, inspirational quotes, stuff that's cool. It might be unrelated. Oh, that's interesting. So it's probably unrelated to my visit and not asking me to do homework to remind me of what I'm not doing, but just something cool that's interesting. Sure. Alerting them to relevant events. Yeah, man, if you can be a hookup for all the cool events happening in your community, awesome. So all the links that I provided in this call could be examples of that. Things to beautify their lives, places to check out, follow up with something that they mentioned that you run across, you're listening, stuff that makes you go, all of those are great examples. See, so if you can become like a hookup of cool things, awesome. And that's what you want to be, a hookup and a filter curator, so that they can trust that when they open an email from you, it's going to be something good for the most part. And they really will then just allow you a lot of space to like, okay, they need to make a living, a promote. But if you try to flip that and have 80% of what you send be promotion, only 20% value, it's harder. Stories about case studies that you're excited about. Yeah, awesome. Like, hey, I just had a session with a client and here's what I learned, and that type of thing can be really great. Giving reviews about some products or new services, updates on new things in the market that are related to what you're doing, birthday wishes. You're all brilliant. That's great. So you get the idea. And here's something I just want to lift up to consider is the way that all that, like social media, a blog, an email list can work together to create more of this marketing 2.0 conversation type of thing. For example, I had a homepage. The homepage video I have now isn't the original one I had. I had one I just done with my webcam. I got this new one professionally done. I was a guinea pig for Donna Santos, her first video, and I liked it. But I also like things about the old video. So what I did is I emailed my list. I said, hey, can I get your hand with something? I've got these two videos. Can you give me commentary on what you think? And I thought this might be an interesting conversation because I know some of you might be thinking about creating your own homepage video at some point. And man, people shared the most brilliant insights about it, and they really dove into it. And then I took all of – so I sent an email, which sent them to a blog post, and on the blog post there were those two videos. They put their comments in the blog post. I then took those comments, cleaned them up, organized them, turned that into another blog post of 14 lessons I learned about how to do a homepage video. And I can take that blog post and I could share that on social media. You get the sense. Or I could post a question on social media. One question I had was like, what are the best email service providers? And I'm going to post it right now. Here are some of the answers I got. So there were four main ones that people seem to like. ConstantContact.com, MailChimp.com, MyEmma.com, and MadMimi.com. So I just posted those in the group. But that came from like a Facebook post. I haven't done it yet, but I'll probably take that and turn that into a blog post. So through conversations, we can be sourcing a lot of stuff. And like we just did here in the group, right? So what would you put to stay in touch with in that 80%? And you did all of that. You know, that's the kind of stuff I could take and turn it into a blog post or a product. And you all get a cut. But you get the idea. So if you don't have an email list yet, I super recommend getting an online email service provider. Really important. It handles all the unsubscribes. It will show you what percentage of people open up your emails, which will depress the hell out of you, et cetera, et cetera. So having mechanisms to stay in touch with your clients, whether blog, social media, or email, so important. Obviously, it's a huge topic. So just to recap this call, then I'm going to give you your homework, which I'll also email to those of you who've dropped off the call already. So we've got, for your container, it's all about it being safe to approach and check you out, having a lot of different ways. But it's also a container to make it sustainable so it holds you. And the 10 elements I've said are the website, your bio, your photo, a description of what you do, email database, your Hubs database, testimonials and case studies, a sales funnel, community building initiatives, and staying in touch mechanisms. So all of those matter. And here's what I'm going to invite you to do. This is all stuff, by the way, that can take years to work on. So underwhelm yourself with all of this. Don't go trying to do all of this next week. This can take a long time to build. This is, think years, not weeks. It's easy to get excited and just want to do it all, but really pace yourself on this. Work on whatever you feel drawn to work on. And here's what's wonderful. This is the promise of the container. Once it's built, it's basically built. Once you've got your boat built, it's basically done. Once you've got your bio done, it's basically, you'll update it. You can tweak it. Your photo, every 3 years, maybe a new one. Your website, you'll tweak. The description, you'll tweak. Hubs database, email data, you'll add to as you go. Case studies, you'll get them as they come in. But once you've basically got the structure, it's done. It's there, and it's there to support you. So it's a tortoise versus the hare thing. You know, it's going to take time to build this, but as you do, every single piece that you get into place, it will feel so good, I promise you. So here's the piece I want to give as homework. A lot about this idea of who, and you've done so much amazing work supporting each other and refining the small circle. So the homework is for the small circle to come up with either a piece of or a whole sales funnel, but just like a project that you could offer to that target market, to that particular small circle. Something that you could do that would be a really cool, exciting thing that could bring you money, could sustain you a little bit, but could also just be something you could try out to experiment. And so when you think of the sales funnel, it's either going to be a pink spoon, a package, a program, or a product. So one of those four, you can come up with all four if you want to go crazy. You can just pick one if you'd like, and for that one little circle. So you've got the little circle you've been working on. So if that still feels right for you, I want you to take that, and you're going to come up with a project. And you lucky people, I'm also going to put up a document right away, which is the 29 examples of what a niche project could be. Because there are, there are lots of different examples of what you could do in a niche project. And some of them are really out of the box and you might not have even considered before, but could be really fun. So I'm going to invite you to pick one. And the homework is to, again, summarize it in 250 words and communicate to us, here's the group in 250 words or less, and like here's the who, and here's the project that I'm thinking of coming up with for them. And by the way, this might be something you're already doing and you just want some help to refine and tweak and take to the next level, or it might be something new. So I hope that makes sense. I'm just going to see if there are any questions here before we wrap up the call. So Tim said, I'm not clear on what we're doing. You're gonna pick the Yanina likes it. What? I thought I was totally clear. How quickly they turn. So you're gonna pick one, that little circle you've been working with, yeah? And you're gonna think of what's a project that I could do, some sort of offer that I could be bringing to them. So maybe you think, you know what, I want to come up with a workshop just for those people. Or you think, you know, I really want to come up with a package of like how to help people with moving through divorce just for them. So it's like it's going to include a DVD, some books, a series of sessions and a workshop. Or it might be like, you know, I really want to organize a tour of all the organic grocery stores because people want to eat healthy. And I want to do a walking tour where we do a walk so we're getting healthy and we visit all these organic grocery stores. And that there's a woman in Guelph. So these are some Alex Baisley stories to further sell you on Alex Baisley, bigdreamprogram.com/WordPress. But Alex was working with a lady who was really passionate about permaculture, or not perm, straw bale construction, but she had no expertise in straw bale, but she just thought it was really cool. So she couldn't do a workshop, but what she did was she knew there were a lot of people who had straw bale homes in the area. So she went to them and said, hey, could I organize a tour to bring people to your homes? And would you be open to like bring people in and letting them see? And they, of course, were so excited because they, you know, they're that type of person. So she organized a tour, charged like $25 a head or $50, something like that. And she would do it every few weeks, and she'd make like $600 on a Saturday. And then there was a local organic farmer, and they were like, "Hey, can we provide a free lunch for your tour? Because the kind of people who would build this are the kind of people we'd love to have buy from our farm." And so she was like, oh, sure, okay. So they provided a free lunch. Then this architect was like, hey, could I do a half-hour presentation around straw bale construction? Because if people, they're going to eventually need to hire somebody to help them build it, and we'd like to get into that, could we do this free presentation? So they ended up coming with this really kick-ass thing, niche project. It's not – so it's a niche project because it's small. It has a beginning and an end, or it's just not going to take a lot of your effort. But if you can do that, we'll bring in – and that will let you experiment with this idea of niche and focus in a safe way. So I'll send you a list of things, and I think that will give you a better idea. Wow, this has been an epic 2-hour call with a delightful 5-minute interlude. So I hope this was useful for you. And before you take a nap, Margaret, I was wondering if everyone could just do a quick post of what was the most useful thing you got from this call. Most valuable piece of content, because I know this was so much, you probably, your heads are full. Don't worry about absorbing it all. Know this is here for you for years to work on, but think about the niche project, and I'll send you a follow-up email. I'll post the document it will all be made clear. And if it's not clear, then you can give me some sass. But we're going to end this call now. God bless you all. I love you. I'm so enjoying this 6 weeks with you. Please post on the wall what you got from today's call that was most useful. Take care. Bye.